Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio, and I'm Michael Elves. Kicking things off tonight from Mongolian beatmaker Buddy Q. That was Spring from the Moscow beat tape released earlier this year, and that's BODHIKHUU if you're looking for them on Bandcamp, and I suggest you do. Lots of great stuff from them. Lots of great stuff on the show tonight. Ticket Momster is going to be given the Go to the Gig show recommendations in just a few minutes. Coming up a little later, folk singer Maria Dunn, who's going to be in town tomorrow as part of the Winnipeg General Strike 100th anniversary celebrations. And to close out the show, we're going to be talking to Jacqueline from the band Doom Squad, who are playing the Goodwill next Friday night alongside Operators, both of whom have really great new records out. We'll play a little bit from each of them. But before we get to that, brand new single from Israeli act Kudiman. We've played his stuff in the past here on Thank God It's Free Range. Just got sent a new single that he did with Turkish singer Melike Sahin. It's called Sakla Beni. Here it is, 101.5 UMFM.
It's Ticket Momster. There's so much going on next week in the city. When it rains, it pours. Prepare to get wet. Tuesday, May 28th, Jeremy and the Delicious Hounds will be at CCFM on Provence, $10 at the door. And then on Thursday, May 30th, Ego Spank presents the music of Prince. Now, tribute shows aren't really my thing, but check out this lineup. Are you ready? JD Edwards, Roman Clark, Joe Curtis, and Todd Martin. Now, if that's not a dream lineup of local frontmen, I don't know what is. This event takes place at the West End Cultural Center. Tickets at eventbrite.com. Now, I was never really into Prince. I don't deny his talent or influence as a performer, but his music just wasn't really my thing. But I'm so excited to see these guys perform together in one show. Heck, they could be covering the music of Perry Como, and I'd still be like, I can't wait! So let's listen to Roman Clark to tide us over. Here's a new one off his album Scorcher. This is Next Time.
Do another next time. No, I can't do another next time. Oh no. Clark with Next Time off his new album Scorcher. He'll be at the West End Cultural Center covering the music of Prince along with J.D. Edwards, Joe Curtis, and Todd Martin, and that show is this Thursday, May 30th. Tickets at eventbrite.com. J.P. Ho and friends are at the Park Theatre on Saturday, June 1st. Tickets at ticketfly.com. And the Northern Royals are at the Cavern that same night. Tickets at the door. Big news from Bright Righteous. Friday, May 31st, will be their, quote, last Winnipeg show indefinitely, end quote. When I first read that, I thought they were breaking up, but it turns out they're still making music. They're just going on an extensive road trip and won't be playing in Winnipeg for a very long time. Their Facebook page says they'll be evolving and growing in the next while with big changes to come. So, if you like this version of Bright Righteous, don't miss them at the Pyramid Cabaret this Friday. Tickets at pyramidcabaret.com. I'm going to play Wildfire by Bright Righteous in a second, but first I want to let you know that I've got a post pinned to the top of my Ticket Momster Facebook page with more show recommendations. Have a great week. Good night.
I see the scars through the cover up, drinking the lies that you bottled up. You're burning away. Let down the people that you held so close. Sever the ties, now you're just a ghost. It's starting to fade.
Choking, I'm smoking, I'm
From the forthcoming self-titled record on ATO Records, that is Australians Amelin the Sniffers with Angel. Before that, The Beaches with Desdemona, the lead-off track to their new EP, The Professional. And, of course, Bright Righteous with Wildfire from their self-titled record started that set off. That one was Ticket Monster's selection. The other two are mine. And speaking of my selections, we're going to get into another of my longtime favorites, Paper Beat Scissors. We haven't heard from Tim Crabtree in a while, but he's got a new record coming out on Rough Trade, and the first single dropped earlier this week. It's called Don't Mind. We're going to slow things down a little bit here as we head into a little bit of a folk section, because we're going to be talking to Maria Dunn after a couple songs here. So stick around here on 101.5 UMFM.
Out of my mouth, was he reason first? Was he?
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. Well, tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Memorial Park as part of the 100th anniversary of the Winnipeg General Strike Solidarity Forever Parade and Concert. This is sponsored by the UFCW and CUPE, as well as Manitoba Teacher Society and the Manitoba Association of Healthcare Professionals. Big concert, including lots of great local talent, but also coming in from out of town, Maria Dunn. And so coming up after this next track, I'm going to talk to Maria Dunn about her career and about this show. Before we get to that, another person on the bill, Heather Bishop, no stranger to Winnipeg music fans and particularly folk fans. We're going to hear the leadoff track to My Face is a Map of My Time here. It's called Party in the Sun. Forecast not really sunny for tomorrow, but fingers crossed we can party in the sun. This is a free event happening at Memorial Park, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. tomorrow. Coming up here, Heather Bishop on 101.5 UMFM.
Friday night in the solar system, and the sun called up all his friends, and he said, there's a party at my place, y'all, 9 o'clock, don't knock, just come on in. All the planets are SVP'd, and the sun said, I got everything we need to be drinking and dancing and getting it on, and we ain't gonna stop till the bricky break of dawn, come on. I said, come on. Mercury showed up early. He was wasted by the time that Venus walked in with her new girlfriend, and Merc went over there, started hassling them, and the Earth stepped in trying to keep the peace. Merc was like, bitch, don't start with me, please. After 10,000 years of your bullshitting wars, and you're trying to tell me about the use of force. I don't think so. About then was when Mars walked in, headed straight for the turntable, started to spin. Jupiter and Saturn started bumping and grinding, and suddenly old Merc didn't really seem to mind. In fact, hit the dance floor and never looked back. In walked who else but the Zodiac pack, and fat sacks and backpacks filled with tasty snacks. And right about then the party started to relax. Pluto stepped out behind the shed, and when she came back in, her eyes were all red, and she slid on over to the microphone, started busting the flow and singing a song. She go, there's a party in the sun tonight, everybody gonna do it upright, everybody having fun tonight, cause there's a party in the sun tonight, there's a party in the sun tonight, everybody gonna do it upright, everybody having fun tonight, cause... Party in the sun tonight. Everybody gonna do it upright. Everybody having fun tonight. Cause there's a party in the sun. Back on the farm in the middle of the pasture, there's an old Chevy station wagon, a couple of astrological books, some whiskey and coke, and two young lovers in a telescope. One says to the other, girl, I can't see shit through this thing. It must be busted. You take a look at it. She go, boy, get in the back seat. Let's get this done. 9 o'clock, I'm going to a party in the sun. Come on. There's a party in the sun tonight. Everybody gonna do it upright. Everybody having fun tonight. Cause there's a party in the sun tonight. There's a party in the sun tonight. Everybody gonna do it upright. Everybody having fun tonight. Cause there's a party in the sun. Party in the sun tonight.
All right, well, loads of anniversaries this year, and for our next guest, Maria Dunn, it's her own anniversary of when she started her musical career as well, and she'll be performing at the Winnipeg General Strike anniversary. Maria Dunn's on the line. How are you doing?
Absolutely great. I've just come from Ontario and New England doing some shows out there in early May, and I'm actually sitting in BC. I'll be performing in Vernon tomorrow night and then Penticton, and then fly to Winnipeg for the big 100th celebration concert on Saturday.
Now, as I mentioned, it's 20 years since you left your day job to pursue music full time. You've also done a Pete Seeger 100th birthday this year. Is that right?
Yep.
As well as this general strike. It's like a confluence of big anniversaries this year.
Yeah, it's all lining up. Yeah, 20 years ago, I left my last fairly secure job at the University of Alberta. I had worked for about 10 years in different research assistant positions in the fields of psychology and rehab medicine, and but slowly bringing music more into it. And I recorded my first album, From Where I Stand, and released that in October of 98. So by May of 99, I was getting busy enough that I sort of felt I could make that leap of faith, which is what I'm calling this tour 20 years later. It's been, you know, it's been a wonderful excuse to look back on 20 years and, you know, think about what leads one to pursue music full time and then all of the wonderful adventures that you have along the way.
That opportunity to look back, because a lot of times with an artist, you know, especially, you know, as a solo artist kind of doing your own thing, you're booking your shows, you're creating your music, you're touring, you're wearing like 18 different hats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a lot of time for retrospective thought.
No, there isn't. And, you know, and we are some of our own worst critics in terms of what we feel we should be achieving. Or there's always, you're always looking forward to make stuff happen 18 months, 2 years down the line. You're always looking ahead. So it is really nice to kind of look back and say, oh, yeah, I've traveled to these places. I've had the chance to perform with these folks. I've released 6 albums now, and 2 have been nominated for Junos. You know, it's affirming to look back and think about that, because when you start off this kind of a musical endeavor, a career, I suppose, or a vocation, some people would call it, you know, you don't know where it's going to lead, and you pour your heart and soul and all your money and all your time into it, and then just see where it goes. And, you know, it's very satisfying then 20 years later to think, yeah, that was a good decision.
You mentioned that, you know, you're calling this Leap of Faith tour. Is that, looking back, is that what you felt you did, or is that like at the time? Like, I'm curious, you know, could you remember the Maria of 20 years ago and the decision making that went into that? Was that, did you feel it was a leap of faith at that point, or is it kind of in retrospect that you're feeling like it was?
That's a good question. I'm probably exaggerating the leap part of it because it did feel like a sort of gradual process. And, you know, I had worked so many research contracts at that point with really great people that I sort of felt like if I fall flat on my face in a year or two, I still have all these connections to this world of work that I find very satisfying. So it didn't feel maybe, you know, it didn't feel as risky as it sounds. But it still is kind of, you know, you sort of leave that regular paycheck and just immerse yourself in becoming self-employed and realizing how little you know and making it up as you go along.
Right.
You know, I'm lucky that I had mentors who had done things like put out independent recordings sort of 6 months before me. Shannon Johnson and her brothers, Jeremiah and Solon McDade, they were all full-time musicians already, and I had done a little bit of playing with them. I felt like I could wrap my head around what it meant to try and make a living as a musician full-time. And also their dad, Terry McDade, had recorded an independent album about 6 months before me. So I was constantly on the phone saying, so what do I do next? Who do I get to do the artwork? Where do I send it for manufacturing? That sort of thing. So, you know, I had a lot of mentors that were very helpful in kind of making that transition.
And as you said, you know, you'd released the album in October, you said, in 98? Yep. So, I mean, you had it in hand, right? It wasn't like you were like, okay, I'm going to go record an album. I'm quitting my job. You kind of had something already that you were then touring in support of or able to play on the road. And it wasn't completely tabula rasa.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. You know, and I had been playing music all my life for fun. And at that point, had been playing in folk bands in Edmonton for about 9 years. So, you know, I'd learned lots of other people's songs. I was a DJ at CJSR, the mighty FM 88.5 at the University of Alberta. So I felt like that was a master's degree in folk music, preparing a show every week, getting the chance to listen to the absolute, you know, finest songwriters and instrumental musicians, and, you know, feeling like I learned so much just listening and putting all of that together. And then as a, you know, as a young person playing in a few different folk bands, learning traditional Scottish-Irish songs, you know, covering some of my favorite artists like the Indigo Girls, Lucinda Williams, their Proclaimers, Dick Gauchin. You know, I felt like you learn a lot in learning other people's songs about the craft of songwriting. So, yeah, so in some ways it was a gradual transition in that, you know, as soon as I had my 9-to-5 job after being a student and doing some traveling in the early 90s, as soon as I had that 9-to-5 job, it felt like every ounce of energy went into playing music for the joy of it and going to folk festivals and interviewing other artists and putting together radio shows and all of that creativity. So it's interesting, though, because I don't know if you know about CKUA radio in Alberta. So we're very lucky to have a province-wide radio station that is supported by listeners. And in 1997, in the spring of 97, they were shut down. They had at that point been owned by the Alberta government, and it was during the Klein years of privatizing things and selling things off. And the people managing it sort of bled the station dry, and all of a sudden, all of the music DJs were locked out. The radio was silent. I was still doing my Friday morning radio show on CJSR at the university, and I started getting phone calls, what's going on with CKUA? And I was sitting there dressed much nicer than I normally would be for my Friday morning folk show, because I was supposed to go for an interview to CKUA later that day, thinking that I might actually finally get, you know, some paid employment doing folk radio or folk roots radio. And so in some ways it was that classic case of one door shuts, because the last thing that was going to happen at that point was that I was ever going to get a job on CKUA, certainly in the short term. And then another door opens in that I had been in a song contest earlier that spring, and I didn't win the contest, but Terry Wickham from the Edmonton Folk Festival had come to some of the final nights of it. It had run over a couple of months. So I didn't win, but he offered me a slot at the 1997 Edmonton Folk Festival. So again, you know, by 99, I had, you know, played the folk festival. I had realized that people were interested in hearing my own songs, and, you know, was started to kind of wrap my head around all of that and, you know, and start the process of a first recording that would come out in 98. So yeah, it's fascinating to look back on it now. When you're in the middle of it all, you just kind of
have your head down.
Yeah, exactly. Head down. And what do I do now? And you know, I had such hopes at that time of doing more with radio. And then I kept my show at CJSR. I still love traveling around. You know, I just did a couple of community radio interviews in New York State with Sunny Oaks, the sister of Phil Oaks. She's still got a radio show in Roxbury, New York, and Wanda Fisher in Albany, New York, and Jim Marino at the University of at McMaster University in Hamilton. He's celebrating 25 years of folk roots radio. And you know, I love going and visiting all of these folks in all these different communities. You know, I really value community radio. And so I kept my own radio show going till about 2000. And then it just became too much. I sort of thought, you know, I need to put all my musical creative energy now into being Maria Dunn, songwriter and musician.
Right. Now, you know, when you're listening to these other songwriters in putting your shows together, like, are you thinking critically about kind of like song structure or, you know, word choice or, you know, compositional elements? Like, is it something like down to kind of like the minutia that you're looking at, you know, from a creative standpoint?
In listening to other songwriters? Yeah, sometimes. I was probably less consciously just absorbing stuff in those years, but thinking about what works, for instance, the first two songs I ever learned on a guitar, when I was given a guitar as a Christmas gift in 1988, I think, the first two songs I learned were Eric Bogle's No Man's Land, or Greenfields of France is sometimes known as, and Ralph McTell's Streets of London. And I think, you know, I started to become aware of certain song forms, you know, something like Streets of London that takes snapshots of a whole bunch of different characters and then wraps it together into a chorus that that ties those individual stories together. Or a song like Nancy Griffith's It's a Hard Life Wherever You Go, where you get snapshots from different characters and then you bring that together in a chorus. And so that's something I certainly drew on for a song of mine that I still play, that I wrote in 2000, and I actually probably wrote it in about 99, and it appeared on For a Song, which is my second album, Take It Easy on Me. And that's a song I still play at every concert, you know, where I have the time to sort of play a full concert. Mm-hmm. And that very much, again, I'm painting little pictures and in some ways trying to paint them in such a way that different people can get different things out of each of those verses. And then the chorus comes together, Take It Easy on Me. So yeah, that definitely came out of sort of really being struck by how some songwriters use that way of getting an emotion across.
Right.
You know, and then someone like Eric Bogle with his that way of, you know, he's singing about, you know, well, how do you do, Private Willie McBride? So he's singing from someone outside the story in the present tense, visiting the gravesite of a World War I soldier. So it's an interesting way of narrating that story of the war kind of from a slightly different perspective than writing it from the point of view of a soldier serving in the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's from someone remembering, or in his case, not even really knowing who this soldier was and just imagining the different possibilities. So I would definitely say that from those years as a DJ, definitely being drawn so much to story songs But, you know, but also growing up, you know, I grew up in a household where my parents both played and sang for fun. And so they would sing, you know, Scottish and Irish folk songs, and we'd have those kinds of records. You know, so there's such a strong narrative storytelling element in all of that kind of material that also helped form the songwriting.
With the kind of looking back that you've done as a result of this 20th anniversary, do you look back at kind of the songwriter that Maria was in like 98, 99 and see kind of like a through line to who you are now in 2019? Or do you feel that you've kind of like evolved as a songwriter? Do you see like a dramatic change?
Well, I laughed when we were working up some of the songs I haven't played for quite a while that were on that first album. We did a big concert at Festival Place in Sherwood Park, just outside of Edmonton, to celebrate the 20th anniversary. And so we pulled out the 20th anniversary of From Where I Stand. So we pulled out some of those songs we haven't played for a while, things like The Bus Song, Cold Wind, Orphan Hand, which was a specific request from Roddy Campbell of Penguin Eggs magazine. And Orphan Hand is a song about the child migrants who were brought from different homes in the UK, from especially the big cities with a lot of poverty. So well-intentioned folks like the Barnardo Homes sent orphan children, or sometimes children whose parents were just poor, too poor to keep them, over to Canada to work on farms, to work in communities in Canada, to sort of give them a new life, a new chance in Canada. And the reality is that some kids had a good experience, some kids were neglected and abused, and the supervision, some kids were separated from their siblings. The supervision of the homes on these kids was definitely not what it should have been. I'm getting a little sidetracked telling you about that song, but I was laughing in trying to work it up again and sing it and thinking, man, did I ever put a whole lot of words in these lines? And, you know, it was tricky. We had to slow it down a little bit. So I think as I certainly can see just in a technical song craft way, I think I maybe don't try and cram quite so much into a melodic line in terms of lyrics as I used to.
You become more economical with words?
Yeah, I think so. And a little more conscious about thinking what words I emphasize sort of on the beat, and that sort of thing. And a little harder on myself in terms of, no, that line doesn't quite work. You know, you got to find a way to shift that around because it's still bugging me after singing something for a couple of months. And whereas maybe when I was younger, I would have thought, well, it fits and it works and people like the song and that's great. So I think, you know, yeah, I'm a little critical of my younger songwriting self in terms of some of the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the stories and the through line of telling stories less heard, maybe in the mainstream media or in our history books, that's always been important to me. And I started writing about history through learning about my own family history, and that those first songs that were on that first album, Shoes of a Man and New York 1849, those were real lessons in bringing history alive, in thinking about the person who lived through those times and trying to connect a listener today with who that person would have been and what emotionally they would have been experiencing.
Well, that makes you a perfect fit for the 1919 anniversary concert.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's May 25th, Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Memorial Park. Before we let you go, Maria, I want to get you to pick a track from your discography that we can play for listeners, whether it's one you've mentioned already or something else that you want us to
sure.
highlight.
Sure. Well, I'm thinking in terms of 1919 that if you played do you know Slim Evans? That would be very appropriate to the sympathy strikes and the solidarity that was going on in Alberta with Winnipeg workers during the Winnipeg General Strike.
Perfect. Well, Maria, thanks very much for taking some time out of your day. Safe travels making it here to Winnipeg and looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael. Those were fabulous questions. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I'll look forward to seeing you then.
Do you know Slim Evans, friend of the working miner? I hear he's in Prince Albert Jail doing 3 years' time for fraudulent conversion, the judge's name for what he'd done, feeding hungry families from the union pie. Yes, I know Slim Evans, friend of the working miner, never was afraid to put himself on the line. Believed in the one big union, that's why they didn't want him. That's why feeding hungry families became a crime.
From Miller Valley in 1919, soldiers returning from war, Arthur Slim Evans arrived on the scene, saying one big union's worth fighting for. Well, he spoke to the man in the Monarch mine. Together we can stand so strong. Make sure that our coal gets properly weighed so the boss won't get our labor for a song. But the coal operators turned their backs on this union.
Yes, I'll sign my name to petition his release. It's the least that I can do for the man who put the money where our hungry mouths were and damn their union fees. Do you know Slim Evans, friend of the working miner? I hear he's out after only 9 months in the pen. 'Cause 8,700 very grateful families signed their names remembering why they called him friend.
All right, well, coming to the Goodwill May 31st, joining Operators, the band Doom Squad touring in support of Let Yourself Be Seen. Jacqueline from the band joins us by phone. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good and happy to have you on. So,
Thank you.
This new record, I want to say there's like a sense of urgency or like almost on the verging on panic in terms of the pace of this record. Am I reading something into it, or is there sort of like an insistence and a pace to this that hasn't necessarily been there in the past?
I guess in two ways. I mean, lyrically, there's a lot more lyrics on these new songs than there has been in the past. Definitely our vocals are a lot clearer than our previous recordings, but also in a electronic BPM dance music sense to it, we certainly have a faster rhythm and tone to it, if that's what you mean by urgency.
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, because the BPM, as you mentioned, the pace it sets sometimes feels like your vocals are trying to, like, catch up to it or something, that there's, like, this heartbeat that's pulling at you or something. And I'm curious about kind of, like, was there any intentionality or thought to kind of pace and the mood that sets?
Well, naturally, I think just as we were writing these songs and, you know, we were formulating our thoughts and ideas, like, for instance, like the track Let It Go that we just put out a couple weeks ago. That's a 145 BPM, which is one of our fastest songs we made yet, but that, I think that did match the lyrics naturally too, when we were just kind of singing these mantras of let it go and questioning this duality of, do we let it go and how, and if we do, where does it go? Where does these spaces that we hold on to go to, and questioning it? I think it did make sense to just move fast through it. Or that's what we were intuitively doing when we made the beats anyway. I feel like when we say something, we move to it. And if we're moving quickly, we make a faster beat, I suppose.
Right. Now, do you as a band have sort of these philosophical questions about, you know, what songs or what the context of songs are? Like, are you discussing, like, intentionally what you're trying to get across messaging-wise?
Yeah. Are you talking about a particular track or all of them?
I think all of it, because there's a lot about kind of, like, contemporary living and, you know, people's sort of presence online versus their real lives. There's, you know, global warming. There's a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah, I think, like, Let Yourself Be Seen in general, we've a lot of the topics that we address in this album have constantly been on our mind, but we've talked about it within an inner group of people or amongst ourselves, and we really, on this record, we really stood in front of these ideas rather than, you know, behind them or behind our own art. We kind of, like, stood in front of our art, stood in front of the things we were saying, and we were a little bit more aggressive about our approach to that. And all the songs, I mean, they all have specific things in general, but what links them together is just this question and what have we lost in today's society? How do we hold on to our spiritual values? How do we remain individuals? How do we support what we care about? What is, like, the essence of our nature and in our activist roots? But how do we also, without, you know, becoming isolated and leaving a sense of community and isolating yourself in a way that leaves you from other people, how can we make our voice be loud and heard without disappearing and, you know, being completely anarchist and losing yourself? And a lot of the people who have inspired this record are a lot of outsiders, artists from different communities. And not only are we sharing their voices in this record, but we identify with them and we identify with other people in our community. And so we're kind of pulling some of our ideas of, you know, is there a place for spirit anymore? Yes, there is. Where is it? And we've heard, you know, these questions in peers before us and in artists we've looked up to and outsiders and activists. And so we find ourselves just repeating certain mantras of other people, and we, our way of unifying that is through dance music and through dance culture and sort of like moving through change, dancing on your conscience, dancing through spirit. You know, coming together and using like the dance floor as a, you know, as a utopian space of protest and being with other people and moving through rhythm.
When you're writing songs, do you have kind of like a point of view or specific messaging for a song that you're looking to create, or like how does that kind of come about?
The point of view is ours. I guess different songs, like some songs have just been like, whoa, we have to, you know, this is a feeling and we have to write a song about this. But some songs have been really inspired about specific people, you know, Dorian Corey or Emma Goldberg, or, you know, the song Emma is about her and Dorian Corey is Dorian's closet. And Let It Go, for example, that song was about, you know, a lot of these community spaces, these art studios and mostly music venues were shutting down, not just in Toronto and in Winnipeg and in Montreal, but all across North America. I think in, you know, in Europe too, there was the ghost ship fires in Oakland, California and San Francisco. And there's just been this displacement of artists and wondering, you know, where do we go? These venues will live on, and who do they go to, and is it okay? Can we live, you know, in ephemeral existence? Like, where do we go next? And Let It Go came out of, it was pretty clear how we were responding to what was happening around us, and we had these questions that we were toying with that helped us cope with, justify and cope, like, what was happening. And so certain songs come out easier than others, I suppose.
Right. Now touring around in the past, did that impact the record in its creation? Like, did you find that different places flavored or impacted the creation of this record at all?
I think we have like different experiences. Like, certainly, like touring in the south of the U.S. kind of feels, we get the same response as like touring in like the northern UK or, you know, northern parts of Europe or Eastern Europe, where it's like the audiences, you know, playing in front of an audience in London or New York, like it's a lot of artists who have maybe seen it all, and you sit there and people are kind of more thinking about it's a little bit cool, you know, so you're not like affecting people the same way you do when we have gone down to the south or the north, where not, you know, there's not as many shows that will roll through towns in Alabama or Norfolk, West Virginia. And when we've gone to those places, we've seen all these, you know, freaky, colorful people come out and give us hugs after the show and say how much they needed that and how they see bits of themselves in us and they hear bits of their voice in our music, and we get these hugs afterwards. And that's definitely reminded us how important it is to travel as far as we can to have our music heard in front of so many people. And that's definitely like fueled the project, and keeping us on the road is knowing how good it feels to connect with audiences like that. And yeah, I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, no, that definitely hints at that. I'm always curious, like in the genesis of a record, do you as a band kind of stop listening to other stuff so that it's just you, or do you find that, you know, outside influences kind of seep in? Like, are there certain records or bands that are touch points as you enter the studio and start crafting a new record?
Yeah, that helps a lot. We listen to a lot of music all the time, especially when we're on the road, tons of things. And, you know, we're all over the place in what we listen to and what we like, and the three of us sometimes have different tastes. But I think on this record, there was a lot of like kind of post-punk music from the UK or from New York, early scenes that we just liked the sense of urgency in the urgency in the guitar or the urgency, you know, in the vocals. And we thought about our melodies last because we knew that they were going to fall into place if we set the foundations of our rhythm and beats first. We also were inspired by a lot of acid house music from Chicago and a lot of the UK dance music from the early 2000s and late 90s. And so I guess we tend to listen to a little bit more of that when we were making this record. Although we listened to a lot of Don Cherry and, you know, tried to take some of that into our record, listened to a lot of Alice Coltrane that we would take a bit of that into. Whether people hear that or not, in our minds, we were inspired by lots of things, I guess.
I mean, those obviously, like, there's a kind of a free jazz and kind of less, you know, rigidity to like the Don Cherry or the Alice Coltrane, but the definitely like the spiritual aspect in that, like, yearning seems to be a place that you are coming from, especially lyrically on the record.
Yeah. Yeah, there is this yearning, and I think it's just with us aging I'd like to still think we're all really young, but, you know, aging with our ideas and aging with our philosophies and looking at the world, like, in a little bit of a different way, knowing, like, we have to say something and we have to, you know, we have to be united with other people when we have something to say. And I think there is that sense of yearning or, you know, like a beautiful lament over something that was, which could have been like a lot of these venues and musical spaces that we all grew up listening to music and experimenting with our early sounds that are now all gone in the city. So there was a little bit of a lament for some of these old ideas and old spaces that are now gone.
Now, the track order on the record, I'm always curious, like, kind of how well thought out that is in terms of, you know, like, A to B to C kind of thing. The album ends with Weather Patterns. Was that the, like, fitting kind of final period on this sentence of a record, or, like, how did you guys decide that was the last track on the record?
It makes a lot of sense now that I hear the record, and it wouldn't be any other way, but we didn't write it having it in mind thinking that it would be the last song on the record. But, you know, it does kind of sum up this idea that, you know, we all still get wet in the rain, you know, and we all want to have this bright future, and it just kind of does make this really clear summary. And then there's this point at the end of Weather Patterns, which is a pretty long song, where the, you know, the arpeggiated sequences sort of stop, and then there's this, you know, these synth tones that represent the sunshine, and the whole tonality of the song sort of changes, and then, like, the mantras just start, and my sister and I, you know, chant, you know, just in unison over that. And I think that's just kind of like the moving forward in this. And we'll all still get up every morning and continue on with our lives, even though we all have different perspectives and come from different places. So it does make a lot of sense. And we're really conscious of that now and happy. And maybe it was when we put it on there, it was a really long track and it didn't seem to fit anywhere else. And we just kind of put it on the end. But now we'll pretend it was really intentional from the beginning.
It seems to end on somewhat like at least a hopeful note, right? Because some of the record is dark. There's lyrically, like, you know, some questioning going on. And this, as much as it's not resolved, it at least kind of there becomes a piece to it that, you know, as much as we may disagree as people, ultimately we are people. And that's kind of the underlying message, it seems.
Yeah, that is pretty much the underlying message. Like, at the end of the day, we can still get up and dance and go to shows, and we can still move through ideas, even if we find them distasteful. We can still have our bodies to move through that and our voices to sing through that. And I think, you know, we would be different people with a different perspective if we weren't able in that sense. So that's kind of, we're also optimists, even though we think about a lot of dark things that sit on our conscience daily. Mm-hmm. We are optimists, and I think that's just because we believe in the idea of entropy, and you kind of see how entropy is all around you, and just you know, I'm just hoping in our lifetime some of these, you know, this patriarchal system of capitalism, and it, hopefully, you know, we'll see some entropy in some of these systematic structures that we follow by.
Right. Jacqueline, before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off the record that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking that song in particular or an anecdote about the song, I'd love to hear that.
I'd say the track Emma is really special to us. We spent a lot of time on that track and changed it quite a bit. And, yeah, kind of a B-side on the record, but the three of us really love it. One of our faves.
Well, that's a good reason. So you guys will be in town May 31st at the Goodwill. In the meantime, safe travels, and thanks for taking some time to talk, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much.